Broadcasting live from atop the Rocky Mountains, the crossroads of the West. You are listening to the Liberty Roundtable Radio Talk Show.
All right. Happy to have you along, my fellow Americans. Sam Bushman, Kirk Crosby, live on your radio. Hard-hitting news the networks refuse to use. No doubt starts now. This, my fellow Americans, is indeed the broadcast for. Wow, it's already October the 26th. In the year of our Lord, 2020, this is hour one of two. And our goal always to protect life, liberty, and property, and to promote God, family, and country on your radio and the traditions of our founding fathers. Yes, indeed. In hour one and two, every day, 6 days a week, we use the supreme law of the land, the blueprint for liberty, the Constitution for the United States of America as our guide. And absolutely, we're convinced that checks and balances brilliantly put in place by the Founding Fathers, one of the great peaceful restorative solutions we still have at our fingertips. As you know, we reject revolution. We stand for peaceful restoration of the greatest country on the face of the earth. Welcome to the broadcast. I've been out for a couple of days. I'm going to skip the recap of a previous show because a lot of it was talking about the debates and all this other kind of stuff. Bottom line is each side complaining that they weren't fairly treated, but also each side claiming victory as well. The sham of the debates continue is all I got to say. Okay, we're not really hearing what the candidates think, what they feel. They're browbeaten, manipulated by the commentators and by the moderators and by the adjudicators and by the manipulators. Shall I go on or is that enough? Got it. Okay, thank you very much. That's the deal with that. Now, hard-hitting news the networks refuse to use starts now. What, the elections are, 8 days away? The Beatles used to sing about 8 days a week. Well, there you have it. We need more than a week to discuss the shenanigans going on for this election. That's for sure. Kirk Crosby's with me. Welcome to the broadcast, sir.
Buenos dias. Greetings and salutations. Howdy, howdy, howdy. Thank you, Sam.
We have a very special broadcast today. It's going to be four of us for 2 hours straight. All right, first, Dr. Scott Bradley's with us. Lowell Nelson's with us. Normally, Lowell's with us first hour. Scott's with us second hour every Monday. In this case, we're going to mix it all up, and all four of us are going to be together. And the idea is this, ladies and gentlemen. Listen very carefully to what I'm about to say. It's a quote from de Tocqueville. When the taste for physical gratification among them has grown more rapidly than their education, the time will come when men are carried away and lose all self-restraint. It is not necessary to do violence to such people in order to strip them of the rights they enjoy. They themselves willingly loosen their hold. They neglect their chief business, which is to remain their own masters. Alexis de Tocqueville. Indeed, governments long established should not be changed for light and transient causes. With that as the backdrop for the election discussion today, we'll give a warm welcome to Dr. Scott Bradley first. You with us, sir?
I am indeed, and with four of us here, we ought to be able to stir up enough trouble to last you the whole week.
Amen to that. All right. There's the music. Why? Because we don't have Lowell Nelson with us yet. He'll join us here in just a minute. In the meantime, let's set the stage for this discussion with this idea, Dr. Scott Bradley, that, you know what, we shouldn't change our government for light or in transient purposes. What they're saying is, hey, you know what? Change, we think, is good. You know, candidates run on, it's time for change, or the big change, or we can do this or do that. And it's always looking to government for those answers. The founders clearly warn us that change is relatively not good. And for the most part, especially rapid change, is disaster for any government that preserves liberty. Doctor?
Well, you know, that statement about the, well, let's just take it right out of the Declaration of Independence. Prudence, indeed, will dictate that governments long established should not be changed for light and transient causes. And the fact of the matter is that we seem to be, well, there's a whole bunch of strings we could pull on this one, and how people usually give it up themselves, like we have during this pandemic that's happened, and how people have abandoned all semblance of liberty and seem to be rolling over and well, they bunker up and hunker down, and pretty soon are a bunch of scared rabbits that have let our whole nation slip through our fingers. But there's other things that are happening in the election that will accelerate that, I believe, at this time, because most Americans have not really been paying attention as they've lost their liberties. They've been more interested in whether or not there's going to be an NBA season or an NFL season, or if there's going to be colleges that are going to be able to do it with their all the regulations on. I mean, they're distracted by everything except for maintaining their liberty. They won't even pay attention to that. You know, it's just bizarre to me. Absolutely.
Bizarre indeed. Kurt, you want to take a stab at this one?
Well, we're all for change as long as we're talking about improvements, going back and returning to the principles that we need to be returning to. This whole idea of, changing and moving forward, or progressiveness, if you will, is something to be avoided at all costs.
You know, you guys, I just I think back to Obama's election and his motto, "Change you can believe in." Well, it's a euphemistic term that can be broadly interpreted across the whole spectrum of everything. And his change and my change certainly were not on the same page. And what Kurt's saying, I think, is that if we can restore and renew that which is principled and sound and go back to that rather than press forward into the what seems to be a pathway to communism. That, it's a real weird kind of time we're in.
Where oftentimes they deceive and make you believe that socialism is benevolent. Communism would be evil, but of course socialism is a benevolent good thing. It's the soft, kind of mode to make sure that everybody gets their fair shake. But that is an outright complete psychotic lie as well, because all roads of isms end up really leading to communism outright along the way. In other words, all roads lead there. You might feel like it's a soft travel south at first, but yet over time, the damage is done, to say the least. It's interesting to me, too, when we talk about change. Our founding fathers were not perfect, and the Constitution is not perfect. But I'll tell you what, it's provided more liberty for more people in the history of the world than any other plan, bar none. It's been tried. It's been tested. The founders called it a grand old experiment. They then said the grand old experiment was incredibly successful. Okay, but what we want to do is make change, make change, make change. And every time we make change to supposedly improve things or for the purposes of expediency or for any other reason, it seems like we just take another turn for the worst. Look at our society now. It's violent. It's immoral. I could go on and on. And that's the change that we've supposedly embraced. I submit to you, to our eventual demise, if we're not very careful and if we don't change the road we're on. Looks like Lowell Nelson, campaignforliberty.org, has joined us. We're talking about this idea that we shouldn't change our government for light purposes, and what they want to do every election is they want to go for massive change, always supposedly for the better, Lowell.
Well, I have two comments that come to mind, Sam. Number one, I do like the increased visibility of the Utah State Constitution, which is the natural result of a proposal to change the language of the of the Constitution. The reason I like the emphasis, I like the fact that more people are reading the state constitution. I think for the most part, people put way too much emphasis on the federal constitution, which was intended to constrain the general government. And they put almost no emphasis. I mean, how many people do you know who've actually read the Utah Constitution, the Declaration of Rights in Article 1, for example, and actually understand the contents there? And the reason that I like the emphasis on the state constitution is because the states, by design, by our framers, were to be in charge of or have jurisdiction for all domestic issues, which were numerous and indefinite, right? I mean, the authorities, the rights, and so forth that were supposed to be considered within the purview of the states were numerous and indefinite. And so anything, not mentioned in the state constitution was still held by the states if it wasn't forbidden by the federal. And yet, on the other hand, the federal constitution, it says if it's not here, you don't get it, right? And so the general government only could exercise the authority that was explicitly granted in the federal constitution. So that's why I do like the increased attention that's being devoted to the state constitution. But that's the first thought that comes to my mind. Number two.
Well, so hold on really quick. I agree that transparency is a good thing. And familiarity is a great thing. You know, you got to read and understand and things like that. My fear with that greater transparency, though, I shouldn't say transparency, greater scrutiny and greater focus, though, is that many people who are uneducated about it are making decisions and voting on changes to it without really understanding the changes. Oftentimes when we put together amendments or changes, whatever you want to call it, that might be the legal way to go about it, but yet when they word these things and when they set the stage in the media over and over and over for a certain agenda, pretty soon people believe, because of the propaganda they've received, they believe that, hey, it's all transparent, I understand it, but yet what's happening is they're really deceived. We'll talk about that. Dr. Scott Bradley will respond on the other side. I get the transparency and I agree that it's good for people to be familiar. But if you're not careful, an uneducated, propagandized populace being familiar with something may not be as transparent as we wish. We'll talk about that. Then we'll get to your number two. Lol, hang tight.
Okay, girls, about finished with your lesson on money?
Daddy, what is a buy-sell spread for gold coins?
Well, when you sell a gold coin to a coin shop that's worth, say, $1,200, you don't actually get $1,200. But don't worry, we're members of UPMA now, so we don't have to worry about that.
Daddy, what if somebody steals our gold?
We don't have any gold at the house. It's stored safely in the UPMA vault, securely and insured.
But the S&P 500 outperformed gold. Daddy, gold is a bad investment.
Some people do think of it that way, but actually, gold is money. And as members of the United Precious Metals Association, we can use our gold at any store, just like a credit card. Or I can ask them to drop it right into Mommy and Daddy's bank account, because we're a UPMA member family.
Find out more at upma.org. That's upma.org.
Do we reflect about our future and where we as a culture are moving? Do we keep our trust in our jobs, homes, money, life necessities, investments, stock markets? Do we believe that our 401ks or other retirements will always be there and that the current economic order will recover? Is the economy going to recover and life return to normal? It ain't gonna happen. By a friend of Medjugorje, whether you are poor, middle class, or rich, it ain't gonna happen. A book of astounding revelations about the present economic order and where we are heading. It Ain't Gonna Happen by a friend of Medjugorje. To order, visit Medj.com, spelled MEJ.com, or call Caritas in the U.S., 205-672-2000, 205-672-2000.
So I agree with Lowell Nelson, campaignforliberty.org, that you know what, it's good to have transparency and it's good to have familiarity, and this focus on the state constitution is good because the states should have a lot more power than the federal government. I agree in the point. I'm a little concerned, though, when you have a propagandized public that doesn't truly understand even where their rights come from. It's a little dangerous because it's almost like false transparency in education on the topic. Dr. Bradley, your thought on this real quick.
Well, sure. I too am concerned that normally most people don't understand what their constitution in their state says, and I would really encourage a greater understanding. I'll give you an example. One Utah legislator I know that has been in for 40 years, he made a statement in a public meeting here not too long ago that there is not a constitutional right to private property. Well, Utah's Article 1, in the very first beginning of the Utah Constitution, protects that inherent inalienable right. But he's been in the legislature 40 years, and he himself has not read it carefully enough to understand that. But I want to also maybe, clarify, add on, how I would put it to Lowell. I have a divergence of opinion from many that are what would be considered Tenth Amendmenters. And certainly, we understand from the 45th Federalist Paper that the powers are few and well-defined in the national government, and the inherent ones are left with the states. A lot of Tenth Amendment people, including our own governor in the state of Utah, justifies many of his mandate, quote-unquote, actions under the Tenth Amendment of the United States Constitution, which is absolutely a facade, because think about it for a moment. If nothing's mentioned, do we still retain it? Yes, we do, Ninth Amendment. All right, so do the states have complete carte blanche and everything else? No, they do not. You look at the basic premise of why government exists in the Declaration of Independence, to secure God-given rights. Could the state mandate or even pass so-called legislative action that would say, oh, you can only have one child, or you've got to wear blue shoelaces, or you can only have a chain-link fence, or no, absolutely not.
Or how about a state even saying something like this, you know, we can restrict your gun rights. The Second Amendment only applies to the federal government, not the states, don't you know? And so, as a result, the state can restrict gun rights, but the federal government can't. See, I submit that those are untouchables, and neither can.
And that's the problem with many of our Tenth Amendment friends, is that they believe, because of that statement in the Tenth Amendment, that they have a complete carte blanche, as I said, a blank check that they can write on anything they choose to do. But what they must remain in is within the constitutional limits of their own state constitution. Utah's constitution does not allow any of the things that I've just talked about, nor any of the other things the governor has been doing. The governor, for example, cannot legislate mandates. Sounds like a very manly thing, doesn't it? But the fact of the matter is that the Utah Constitution specifies that all legislative authority is found in the legislature or inherent within the people. And the governor, in a state of emergency, even though there's a continuity of government clauses in the state of Utah's Constitution, cannot usurp those powers. So I think I know where Lowell's going with this kind of thing, but sometimes I'd like to make certain that people that think about this don't assume that there's just a blanket authority for a state to do whatever it darn well pleases. If it violates God-given rights, it's on the wrong path, and our founding document, if you will, the one that set the tone for future governments, is the Declaration, and it says the purpose of government is to secure God-given rights, and states do not, it doesn't say the purpose of the federal government is to secure God-given rights, it says government.
Which so means all government at all levels, and I think the point here that we're really driving at is, remember, ladies and gentlemen, the founders were so brilliant in that they put checks and balances everywhere. And so let's not be fooled into thinking the federal government is locked down and has checks 66 ways from Sunday, but the states have no checks. The states had plenty of checks as well on purpose so that no one gets too much power. What I don't want to do is say, oh, thank heavens we saved ourselves from the feds and then end up with a tyrannical state. If we're not very careful and if we disassemble the checks and balances that our founders put in place, we will have trouble. AK 17th Amendment to make the point. The states should have way more authority than they have, way more influence, but it would be checked by their representatives going back to Washington and hearing about what's happening in the other states and the concerns. And anyway, there's checks and balances across the whole thing. And Lowell, to be clear, this isn't really to take you on that point, but I think really to clarify what you mean is our goal here, which is to say, hey, we need to have transparency. We need to understand the state constitutions have incredible value and reference points for us as a sovereign nation. And as sovereign states, we need to have our state constitutions appropriately safeguard liberty as well. And a focus on that is a good thing. I agree with you. We just wanted to highlight the checks and balances point to be made as well.
Yeah, I totally agree with you all on that. In fact, you've hit upon one of the biggest concerns that I have with the what they call the state sovereignty movement. You've articulated that very nicely, Scott. And that is that people think that, you know, if they, what they don't realize is that reference to state sovereignty really simply means that the people of the states are sovereign. And I think that way too few people understand that distinction. So I appreciate very much your bringing that out just right out of the gate this morning. I truly agree with you 100%. We can't allow the state government to ride roughshod over our rights. You know, the state and local officials, that's the jurisdictions where these things, rights ought to be protected the most and defended the most. And yet we do have a governor who today is legislating from the executive office. He's mandating certain behavior. And
I personally think he needs to be tried for those crimes and stopped.
Yeah.
For that abuse of power, without a doubt. Remember, all levels of government, with all of its checks and balances, remember, they obtain their just power from the consent of the governed. It's delegated by us, the people, the sovereigns, and in so much as they act within their sphere of delegated authority, they do have a lot of power. But when they step outside of that sphere of delegated authority, we have nothing but trouble every time. All right, you had a second?
Sam Lowell, but perhaps I can add just another little thing.
Sure, please.
Piggybacking on what Lowell has said, I'm so glad that we're all on the same page on this thing. I think that all of us need to read the 37th Federalist Paper more often. You know, you talk about the state sovereignty movement. You know, is it a national government or a federal government? Yes. No. No. But Madison, in his brilliant, sparkling, wonderful presentation of that. It is a national government in some areas. It is a federal government in other areas. And these people that are seeking for quote-unquote state sovereignty don't understand the very unique design of our government. The founding fathers understood very clearly that there were some things that had to be at the national level, solely held by them. And there were stuff that there was a federation or a federal government instead of a national. You see, the national government really was in all power in some areas, but not all areas. And it's a federal government in some areas, but not all areas. And read 37. It is just brilliant. But the fact of the matter is a lot of the people that are seeking to change the Constitution through a Constitution convention are seeking to destroy that delicate, wonderful, magnificent balance that was established originally, where the founders in their wisdom said, these things are solely in the purview of the general government, if you will. That's the term they normally used was, you know, I don't want to use federal or national because I'll start an argument with somebody else. But in the hands of the general government, certain things were their purview only. The rest were retained by the states, but those states cannot overstep the bounds and say, oh, suddenly we're going to create a democracy in a state or something. You know, we have this Republican kind of thing out of the fourth article. But the fact of the matter is a lot of these people that are looking to change our Constitution want to go back to failed formulas, for example, that are found in the Articles of Confederation about the state sovereignty stuff and being able to override the national government on some things. I'm using the term again, general government. See, can you understand how this thing is such a magnificent balance and is more pointed
and can
out?
Can you understand how I suggested at the start the propaganda here makes us deceived on what we think we're really advocating for? If you're not careful, you get divided on the federal versus the national. General works well for that articulation. You get deceived on thinking the states have more power than they really do. All levels of government only has the power justly delegated by we the people. We'll talk about it in seconds. We'll come back, let Dr. Scott Bradley finish, and then Lowell had a second point before we get to what we want to start narrow and go broad. How's that? Hang tight.
Pursuing liberty, using the Constitution as our guide. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
You USA Radio News with Lance Pry.
Millions of Americans are hurting as COVID-19 lockdowns keep people from working and the expenses of life keep mounting. Is political motivation keeping the suffering front and center this election? USA Radio News' Tim Berg has more.
Time is running out for a new coronavirus relief bill to pass before Election Day. One of the main sticking points is how much money should be going to cities and local governments. And according to Republican Senator John Thune, it's Democrats that are wanting to wait until after the election to help the American people out.
Money for the post office, money for farmers. I mean, we've moved a bill on the floor now twice in the Senate, but the Democrats have blocked it. So in the end, when the smoke clears after the election, hopefully we can sit down and people can, in good faith, start to compromise. But right now, my impression is that the House Democrats and Speaker Pelosi would much rather have the issue than they would have a solution. And we want a solution.
USA Radio News.
We've all heard it. Eat healthy. But what does eating healthy mean? Sure, there are countless diets out there, but they contradict each other. Yet all experts agree we should eat a diet rich in fruits and vegetables. Whole fruits and vegetables are the perfect fuel to power the cells in your body, giving you the stamina you need to handle your day-to-day activities. And that's what Balance of Nature is. Whole fruits and vegetables delivered to you in a convenient capsule form for only 22 cents a serving. Our proprietary blend has no additives or fillers, just the full nutritional value of a variety of 31 different fruits and vegetables. Balance of Nature provides you with a natural energy boost without a caffeine crash, a 3 o'clock slump, or an early bedtime. Experience the Balance of Nature difference for yourself by going to balanceofnature.com or by calling 1-800-246-8751 and use discount code USA.
U.S. Democrat presidential challenger Joe Biden's assessment of Russia as the biggest threat to the United States national security was wrong and encouraged hatred of Russia. "We absolutely do not agree," Kremlin spokesman Dmitry Peskov told reporters. "We can only regret that absolute hatred of the Russian Federation is spread in this way." The FBI is reminding people that scams increase this time of year. USA Radio News' Wyatt Cox has answers.
In a Saturday tweet from the FBI Las Vegas office, the Bureau identified three red flags you will see in a scam: demanding payment via gift cards, wire transfers, internet currency, or by mailing cash to resolve an issue, creating a sense of urgency that it must be handled now, and demanding secrecy from you in handling the problem. If any of these come up in a phone, email, or other private message conversation, disconnect and contact your local law enforcement office for assistance. I'm Wyatt Cox.
USA Radio News.
Promoting God, family, and country. You are listening to Liberty Roundtable Radio.
All right, you got a square table, I guess. You got four people: Kurt Crosby, Dr. Scott Bradley, Lowell Nelson, and Sam Bushman on your radio for a two-hour special election coverage. You know, a lot of people are going to go straight to the federal government, to the president, thinking that's the most important and the most powerful. I completely disagree. We're going to go from the very local, and we're going to roll to the federal. And the reason we're going to do that is because I really believe your local government is the most important government to you people. And I believe that the narrow focus is the last of focus, which means the narrowest government, which should have tremendous powers in its narrow delegated scope, is the federal government. Let's start broad and let's go narrow. Let's start local. The best government, the government that governs closest to the people, is best. So that's why we're starting there. And you say, well, nationally and worldwide, why would you do that if it's Utah? Because I think there's principles to be taught here all along the way. That's why. So, Dr. Bradley, let's have you finish. We cut you off. Sorry about that, sir. And then we'll go to Lowell's second point.
No, it's very much all right. Just as a kind of an observation, you know, the founding fathers back in the, you know, the 1760s and 70s and 80s, you know, they'd go to a tavern and discuss openly and vigorously and enthusiastically concepts of government, for example. And by that means, they were educating and lifting concepts were born that had not really been thoroughly implemented across the world. And in so doing, they were able to bring forth this magnificent government. I think under the inspiration and guidance of God, that's how deeply I believe in these principles. But I think in a way you talk about this square table, well, maybe it's kind of like sitting around the tavern table in the one of the having a discussion with a bunch of friends, and they remained friends always, you know. And I think that's what we hope.
And if we attack a principle or attack a point someone's making, let's be clear, we're not attacking one another. What we're trying to do is really think through the proper role of limited constitutional government, understand that we're all aligned in our desire to preserve the sacred cause of liberty. Doctor?
Absolutely. So, I think that one of the things that's missing in the modern American political dialogue is that kind of concept. We have so much polarization and acrimony that's grown out of this party concept where really party overcomes and trumps, I hate to use the term trumps, but I will, trumps the concept of principle. You know, principle over party, you know, that really needs to be how it's approached. And the acrimony and polarization has just basically got half the country hating the other half. And really and truly, we ought to be in this together as Americans. I mean, George Washington one night in a particularly burdensome time when the battles were not going his way, and he needed people of solid substance that were there guarding liberty. He said, "Let none but Americans stand guard tonight." I mean, he didn't want people that were they were not fully committed to the whole cause of liberty. I mean, you know, there's a whole dissertation in that concept. Let none but Americans stand guard tonight, and that's what we need: is Americans standing guard today, now, and in this election. And hopefully we'll be able to put a little bit of light and heat into this thing that will encourage that.
Amen. The word party was used, and Kurt always speaks against parties. Boy, do I agree. Kurt?
Well, I mean, I don't think you can emphasize it any stronger than the President George Washington did in his farewell address when he warned against what was called the spirit of party, and we see that so prevalent in our day and time.
Amen. All right, Lowell, you can comment on this, or you wanted to move to your second point as well. Sorry about that, sir. I think true education is coming out of this, though.
Oh, yeah, I love the dialogue. And in my opinion, we're sitting at a round table, which is our namesake of the program there, Sam. We're four people sitting at a round table, and we're loving it. So my second point is just about the meaning of words. We talked about, I mean, the question was, you know, is it okay to change the Constitution for light and transient causes? Well, not only are we changing the Constitution significantly with these little so-called little changes, but we're changing the meaning of words. And I remember a priesthood lesson 30, 40 years ago entitled something like, the adversary's plan to change the meaning of words or something like that. I don't remember the exact title. I remember the concept. And that is that if he can change the meaning of words, to mean something different today than they meant something in yesteryear, then he has successfully changed the document with which that document, you know, the document that was intended to safeguard our rights. For example, the meaning of the word gay when I was a kid was happy and joyous and fulfilled. That was the meaning of the word gay. Today, the meaning of the word gay is almost a sinful, evil, a devilish, type of word that connotes going against what you're born to be. And so simply by changing the meaning of a word and giving it different connotation now, we've changed language. We've changed the foundation of our culture. Now, the example that I go to in Amendment A, for example.
All right, before we get to Amendment A, though, let's quickly delve into this, because I think we're setting the stage nicely to really rifle through these amendments in meaningful ways, which we're going to do in just a second. But I agree with you on this language discussion. Take the word family. What does that mean? Take the word male, female. What do they mean? Take the word gender. What does it mean? Take the word national and federal, as Dr. Bradley pointed out. State. Federal, sovereignty. What do these words mean? And it's very, very, very important to understand. When I speak of a word, and when the liberals or extremes in America speak of words, we're not even really having the same discussion, ladies and gentlemen, about what those words mean. For example, pro-choice, what does that mean? Well, to the pro-deathers, it just means, hey, you have the right to choose to murder your child. Other than that, there's no choice about it. They don't believe in choice. They're socialist and communist, and hey, your choice is dissolved in the, quote, sea of the whole, right? And so then you got to say, well, what's individual versus groupthink versus progressivism? And you get into this whole rabbit trail of Confucianism. And I think that Loeb Nelson is spot on this point, Dr. Bradley.
Well, I agree completely. I mean, those that seek to control the lexicon or language are seeking to modify it. And it's very interesting that I'll just give you a quotation from Thomas Jefferson. He said, "Laws are made for men of ordinary understanding and should therefore be construed by the ordinary rules of common sense. Their meaning is not to be sought for in a metaphysical subtleties which may make anything mean everything or nothing at pleasure." The words have meanings. That's the bottom line. I mean, end of quote. Was it pleasure? But the point of the matter is, words
are not only do they have meanings, Dr. Bradley, but they have historical context.
They can only mean what they meant in the day they were written. And if you say anything other than that, you'd violate all logic, reason, and intelligence. And the fact of the matter is there's a definite effort nowadays to control this and spin them into the definitions that they would prefer to have them, democracies and republics, for example. I mean, there's a world of difference between those things. And the fact is that today, the people that are controlling the political dialogue, and it's not just political, it's all across the spectrum, but in the world we're talking about right now, they have sought to change it so that if these words can mean anything or nothing, then we have no constitution. We have no foundation upon which to build. We are no longer a people bound by God's laws because we have modified them by our definitions. It's just bizarre to me. But that's where we're going. That is absolutely where we're going with
this
nation
right now. Well, and
then
somebody will say, if I challenge this democracy statement, then they'll go, well, I just mean we have a democratic republic. And then I would again say, no, that's not correct. That's the point I'm getting at. We have a constitutional republic, ladies and gentlemen. That means we look towards a document that separates power, that acknowledges that its power is derived from the consent of the governed, that understands the differences and meanings of words and terms. And they're not just a word to be defined at the moment. They're a word that has historical connotations. They're a word that literally means certain principles. Okay, principles are not to be lightly changed. Okay, they're principles that are correct, are based on eternal law. Okay,
what you
can't do is escape this eternal law or point into the author of our liberty. You sever that, and you've got nothing, doctor.
Two more quick statements by Jefferson. I mean, I look at the people that are a lot more wise than I, and this one he stated, "The Constitution on which our Union rests shall be administered by me according to the safe and honest meaning contemplated by the plain understanding of the people of the United States at the time of its adoption, a meaning to be found in the explanations of those who advocated, not those who opposed it. These explanations are preserved in the publications of the time." That's what we're trying to do, is advocate that concept. The other statement we'll have to wait till after the break, maybe, if we can
get back
to
it. You got it. We'll do it in seconds. The next statement, and then Lowell Nelson will start on discussing the proposed changes to the Utah State Constitution.
Why don't we say to the government writ large that they have to spend a little bit less? Anybody ever had less money this year than you had last? Anybody better have a 1% pay cut? You deal with it. That's what government needs, a 1% pay cut. If you take a 1% pay cut across the board, you have more than enough money to actually pay for the disaster relief. But nobody's gonna do that because they're fiscally irresponsible. Who are they? Republicans. Who are they? Democrats. Who are they? Virtually the whole body is careless and reckless with your money. So the money will not be offset by cuts anywhere. The money will be added to the debt, and there will be a day of reckoning. What's the day of reckoning? The day of reckoning may well be the collapse of the stock market. The day of reckoning may be the collapse of the dollar. When it comes, I can't tell you exactly, but I can tell you it has happened repeatedly in history when countries ruin their currency.
You know where the solution can be found, Mr. President? In churches, in wedding chapels, in maternity wards across the country and around the world. More babies will mean forward-looking adults, the sort we need to tackle long-term, large-scale problems. American babies in particular are likely going to be wealthier, better educated, and more conservation-minded than children raised in still industrializing countries. As economist Tyler Cowen recently wrote, quote, by having more children, you're making your nation more populous, thus boosting its capacity to solve climate change. The planet does not need for us to think globally and act locally so much as it needs us to think family and act personally. The solution to so many of our problems, at all times and in all places, is to fall in love, get married, and have some kids.
Begging politicians, bureaucrats, and educrats, and all do-gooders to please obey the supreme law of the land, the Constitution. This is Liberty Roundtable.
All right, Dr. Scott Bradley, Lowell Nelson, Kurt Crosby, Sam Bushman, sitting at the Liberty Round Table, discussing the sacred cause. That is the cause of liberty. You cannot separate that cause from the author, God, who's the author of our liberty. You just can't do it. I was making that point, and then you had some quotes. We had one quote. The second one is just as instructive, Dr. Bradley.
Well, this was 197 years ago when Thomas Jefferson wrote this, and I believe it needs to be reconsidered today. I think it's timeless knowledge. It said, on every question of construction, let us carry ourselves back to the time when the Constitution was adopted, recollect the spirit manifested in the debates, and instead of trying what meaning may be squeezed out of the text or invented against it, conform to the probable one in which it was passed. End quote. I mean, it's kind of like, okay, I'm done. We're good. Let's just go back to what it really meant. And we are just trying to squeeze anything we can out of the text or invent it.
But let's be very clear. Only a moral, only a God-fearing people who have a tremendous respect for the Creator, the author of our liberty, those are the only people that can really step back and put themselves in the founder's shoes and say, okay, what was the intent here? I don't believe any other is able to accomplish such a task. And it doesn't require incredible brilliance. The average farmer can understand it. What it does require, though, is a humility, a dependence on God Almighty, an understanding and a desire for morality and goodness and honor and integrity, etc. And not to desire for power, but to desire to pull it down, to understand the checks and balances in a meaningful way, to say, hey, our only aim is to allow people to remain free. That's a very, very difficult task. So, you know, folks, we recommend we change our state constitution and or our federal constitution only when truly necessary to ensure our liberties. Now, that's a very, very, very rare situation, wouldn't you say, Lowell?
Yeah, I would, and I very much appreciate Dr. Bradley's last point, which was one that I was going to make. If he didn't, which is, we should interpret the Constitution as it was understood by those who ratified it. Not even by those who wrote it, but those who ratified the document. That's why the ratifying debates are so important. Some people think that a textualist, what do the words mean, is the way to interpret the Constitution. I don't believe that at all. We need to understand the Constitution as it was understood at the time it was ratified, because that's, and you're right, you have to have a mindset. You have to understand the mindset of the ratifiers in those ratifying debates and of the gentlemen in the convention in 1787. If you don't understand their mindset, then you really cannot understand what they were trying to do as they put together this republic of republics, so to speak. So, yeah, great point on that. Thank you.
All right, let's talk about... Go ahead, Doctor.
Well, I was going to say, you wouldn't get out in the weeds really big on this, on discussions of this, but it is interesting what Lowell just said. if you look at what was passed by the on the 26th of September, 1789, as a part of, there were 10 proposed amendments passed. No, excuse me, 12. That was forwarded to the states for ratification. 10 of them came back as ratified. It took a couple hundred more years for one of the other ones to get ratified. We still got one out there that isn't. But the point of the matter is that it's that Lowell was pointing out, there were three commas in the Second Amendment, what became the Second Amendment. It really was the Fourth Amendment, but I mean, proposed amendment. But it became our Second Amendment, the right to keep and bear arms. And the part that was passed by the House and the Senate was, there were three commas. There is one comma in what was ratified by the states. Now, that's an interesting thing, but I prefer the reading of the one comma. It makes it so much more clear. It makes and it was what was ratified. Now, of course, the way that it has been judged by a couple of hundred years of experience is that they're both okay. It's all right. It's fine. But the state sent back a ratified amendment with only one comma, which in my mind clarifies the exact purposes of the right to keep and bear arms much more clearly than the one with three commas in. So anyway, as Lowell points out, I mean, what were the people thinking that ratified these
things? And
this
sounds like a simple thing, but it shows their intent. That's the reason that this matters. It shows their intent for clarity and their intent for simplicity, but tremendous understanding of principle along the way. That was the real goal here, right?
Yeah. And really and truly, the cause of liberty was what was at stake and in heart of all the people. And, I mean, it's amazing to me. I believe God raised up these men for this very purpose. They were the best men on the earth, in my opinion. Were they perfect? They were not. Are any mortals perfect? We are not. The only one is our Savior, of course, that's walked the mortal path here on this earth. But I believe that they had wisdom beyond what I cannot think of a single solitary politician today that could stand in their shadow. I really can't. It's just bizarre to me to think that that we would turn a constitution over to these kinds of scoundrels to rewrite them. When they don't understand the nuances of why these delicate balances were woven by the wisdom of ages and the wisdom of inspiration, I believe. So anyway,
that's right.
I
get critical. We don't reinvent the wheel, that we return to what made America great. That's why we talk about restoration as opposed to revolution, or as opposed to any other radical plan. Look, is the Constitution perfect? No. Are the people that created it perfect? No. Are we that are going to carry it out perfect? Far from. However, is it the best we have that has tried and true evidence of a successful experiment? Without a doubt. And there's nothing that compares whatsoever. Now, let's talk about, in Utah, usually they put one or two amendments on the ballot. This time, they've gone crazy. They've got seven of them, Lowell.
Yes, that's right, Sam. Seven, A, B, through G, A, B, C, D, E, F, G. And the very first one, Amendment A, talks about changing, words in about six different provisions of the Constitution. They want to change men to persons. They the word men to persons, the word persons. Now, they want to do this because today's meaning of the word men is different than the meaning of the word men 100 years ago, when Utah became a state, I guess.
Was well, and 1,000 years ago, because remember, men in the Bible referred to mankind.
Yeah.
So it's biblically based the way it is now. What they want to do is change it to, instead of saying he or men or meaning mankind, they want it to be some nebulous, gender-neutral. What'll be next? Change every book? Okay, we need to understand the intent, which was, we're talking about mankind. We're talking about the children of God. You first, Lowell, then Dr. Bradley.
Right, and so the example I want to highlight out of this one change, it's going to change six different places, but the one that I want to point at and focus my opposition toward is this one. This is the phrase, quote, "A wife shall not be compelled to testify against her husband, comma, nor against his wife, end quote. They want to change that to read the following, quote, a person shall not be compelled to testify against the person's spouse, end quote. Now, the first phrase clearly differentiates between a husband and a wife. The second phrase does not, and therefore it takes us further down this path of gender neutrality where you cannot determine, you can't say whether a spouse is male or female. You know, given one, you don't know what the other is. And this is wrong-headed, in my opinion. God made man and woman, right? Male and female created he them. And changing our language in this manner, I believe, is meant to frustrate the purposes of God. It will more easily allow men to marry men and women to marry women, which in God's plan makes no sense.
And for men to masquerade as women and women to masquerade as men, pretending doesn't make it so. Doctor?
Well, absolutely. There's a gender bender factor in this thing all the way through. And in terms of definitions, I want to touch upon something out of a law that was passed in 1973 to say how they're redefining even person. But so the old English, and we could really get off long-term on this thing, too, and I know we've got to move on to a lot, but in the old English, each noun had a kind of a grammatical gender. And so in the modern English, it doesn't. And clear back in 1745, a female, a woman, wrote, her name was Ann Fisher, she wrote a grammar book called The New Grammar, in which they stylized things to be this he and him as being inclusive of both men and women. And we could go to the Constitution, we could learn how the president is always a he, but that nobody's ever said, well, that means a woman can't be and everything like that. I mean, there's so many things that are wrong-headed about this, and I've just barely touched upon it. But let me give you the definition of a term person out of the Endangered Species Act of 1973. It means, this is right out of the act, an individual, corporation, partnership, trust, association, or any other private entity, or any officer, employee, agent, department, or instrumentality of the federal government, of any state, municipality, or political subdivision of a state, or any foreign government, any state, municipality, or political subdivision of a state, or any other entity subject to the jurisdiction of the United States. Huh? Huh? I mean, it's
it
like,
doesn't even have to be a male or a human, and it doesn't even have to be male in characteristic anymore.
It is so bizarre what we do when we start redefining these terms. And I just bring that out to say, what the heck are we doing? I mean, this has been, you know, you look clear back at 1745. It was standardized. The Constitution has been standardized. It has been used all those centuries with the idea of we all understand it. And now, because there's a gender bender factor that's involved in this thing, and we are, now have to become politically correct and acceptable to all, and, you know, the United States Constitution is definitely not conforming to this new standard. Well, it's kind of a whole bucket of worms and just a whole, you start pulling on a string, and pretty soon there's a whole bunch of problems with it. I absolutely unequivocally oppose this. I think that it has become a feel-good kind of thing. And as you look through the Constitution, as Lowell points out, there's some head
right,
scratchers.
We're out of time this hour. Dr. Bradley, you're saying unequivocally no. So are you, right, Lowell?
Correct. Unequivocally no.
And I'm saying no without reservation. No doubt about it. Absolutely not. Do not change this one. Vote no. Kurt, are you a no or a yes?
Well, I got to go along with you guys, yeah.
All right. Mm-hmm. It's an all four in the panel. No, absolutely not. That's hour one. Hour two, we'll drill more into the, quote, proposed changes to the Utah Constitution. Look at your own Constitution in every state, ladies and gentlemen. Are they proposing craziness like this as well? Well, pay attention. Listen to reason and logic. Understand your founding fathers and their intent. Get on your knees and pray for moral guidance. And get up and make wise choices based on God-ordained principles, would you please? For Lowell, Sam, Kurt, and Dr. Bradley, God save the Republic.